Gather round, take a seat, relax. It's the Verbringen with Rabbi Levi Avtzon, right here on 101.9 High FM.
This is 101.9 High FM. My name is Rabbi Levi Avtzon of Linksfield Shul. And here we are together once again on this beautiful Tuesday, the 25th of June, the 19th of Sivan. And for today's show, I prepared some beautiful music and hopefully some interesting ideas. And I actually want to first share something I wrote in the Jewish Report last week, an op-ed. Some of you maybe read it, some of you not, but it's worth exploring. And obviously in a written form, have to keep it condensed. And I would like to unpack some of the ideas. Obviously, feel free to comment, criticize, compliment, or just share your thoughts at 34519. And the op-ed I wrote in the Jewish Report was titled, "Stop Fetching Around the Dinner Table." And I think that although it was op-ed that was in my mind for quite a few weeks, obviously everything happens at the right time, and it ended up getting published after the announcement of the new government, and hopefully an era of good feelings, of positivity. So here it goes. And I would love your thoughts. First, I'm going to read it out, and then we can unpack it throughout the show. God created a perfect world. It's called heaven, where we all go when we pass away from this imperfect world. Heaven is a place of no issues. Grudges, sickness, hate, or human weakness. Heaven is a place of peace. One endless spiritual beach stay. And yet, so many of us on this earth below hold on to the unrealistic expectation that life on earth should be heavenly and perfect, expecting it to be akin to an eternal vacation in our ideal spot, with everyone around us embodying their best selves and always feeling healthy and magnificent. However, life on earth is inherently imperfect, and this expectation can lead only to disappointment when our idealized vision is unmet. Now, this is a simple truth that often eludes even the wisest amongst us. When we compare our lives to the perfection of heaven, we can easily fall into the perilous cycle of self-pity, leading to feelings of anxiety, apathy, that can be detrimental to our well-being. Consider the recent election. Before the election, I posed a simple question to a few friends. Is there any outcome on 29th of May that could make you genuinely positive about the future of our country? Could anything alter your perception of our country's trajectory? The answers were disappointing. Few could dream of a better future. The narrative of doom had taken over with no hope for redemption. Now, this article doesn't deny the challenges that come as part and parcel of living on planet Earth, especially in South Africa. At the same time, I wish to pose two questions. First, is the negativity and cynicism warranted? Second, is it worth it? Now let's delve into the second question, which is more significant. The first, which we have explored in many radio shows in the past, is a matter of personal perspective ultimately, and we can spend endless time debating various facts or interpretations on facts on the first question, which is the negativity and cynicism about this country warranted? However, the second question is straightforward and demands our attention. Has the cynicism and negativity many in the community have fostered over at least three generations been to our betterment or detriment? Over the decades, tens of thousands of Shabbat and Yom Tov meals across the community have been sabotaged by so-called well-meaning conversations, offering doomsday predictions about the future of this country. Now, firstly, this has cut our beautiful community by more than 50%, which itself has been a mixed blessing, both for those who left and those who chose to stay. Secondly, however, the consequences for the mental health of our community has been, in my humble opinion, disastrous. Why? Because most of us cannot live on the fence in constant self-doubt while maintaining our mental health equilibrium. It's like an amateur juggling crystal balls, which will inevitably come crashing down. Or to borrow from another analogy, when I'm waiting for the other shoe to drop, I cannot sleep, and then definitely will not make healthy decisions. If I could just cut in here, the analogy of the shoe dropping, many people don't know it, is about this fellow that every night he lived on the basement or the bottom floor. There was a fellow that would come in the middle of the night that lived upstairs, 2-3 in the morning. The guy would take off his heavy boots, drop them down, and wake up the fellow that lived downstairs. So one time the fellow downstairs reaches out to the fellow upstairs and says, "Please, man, can you please just put down the shoes quietly?" Well, that night at 2 in the morning, the fellow comes, takes up his first shoe, drops it on the floor, and then suddenly remembers, "Oh, I'm supposed to do it quietly." And he takes the other shoe and puts it down quietly. So the first shoe drops heavily and the second shoe quietly. Anyways, about a half an hour later, he hears banging from the basement and the fellow screaming out and say, "Just drop the other shoe already. Just drop the other shoe already." Right? Because the guy can't sleep because he's expecting the second shoe to drop. You can't sleep like that. So let's face the reality that we have a mental health crisis in our community. And though there's no single answer and explanation for something this complex, it's fair and maybe even necessary to pose a simple question. Is the tension in our homes and our collective decades-long conversation about South Africa contributing to the crisis in any way? If the answer is even partially yes, then it leads to the next obvious question. Can I do better in this department and bring less anxiety-provoking feelings and conversations into my home? Some things are outside my control, and then there are those that are within my control. And the wisdom, as the Serenity Prayer says, is to know the difference. We choose what narratives we bring into our homes, which cliches we repeat, and which discussions we allow around the dinner table. May I suggest that bashing South Africa, coupled with fear-mongering about getting into university, should be removed from our table discussions. If it needs to be spoken about, do it occasionally, and not in front of the kids. These conversations usually lead nowhere good, and are mostly counterproductive. I often quip to my community, South Africans live in heaven, but think they're in hell. Let's take load shedding as an example, a situation that has calmed down lately. How many of us have felt gratitude for this respite? Very few. Instead, we heard constant reminders, wait until the 30th of May. New? While this caution might have been warranted, based on previous experience, it's still a miserable way to live. Can't we find joy in the present without prophesizing about an uncertain future? Should I cry when the baby is born because one day, hopefully many years later, it will die? No. To quote Rashi, based on the Talmud, at the time of joy is joy. At the time of mourning, mourn. It's good now? Great. Dance. Might tomorrow be hard? We'll cry then. Now, this isn't about burying our heads in the sand. It's about accepting that life is messy. But messy isn't Armageddon. When we're anxious, we tend to lose perspective on what's a small issue, what's a mild challenge, and what's a fully-fledged crisis. It all becomes a chalent pot of stress. Not every challenge in life is the equivalent of Gog and Magog. And yet, in many of our homes, our level of tension seems to imply that Armageddon is at our doorstep. Always worrying about the future is the antithesis of faith. Yet, basic caution and staying abreast of events and trends is important, but the art of predicting the future, which is more South African than Burvis on a Braai, is a horrible way of living. I'm telling you, Rabbi, as I've heard millions of times, 3 years left to this country. 3 years. Mark my words. Give me a break. Go play golf. You have a better chance of getting a hole-in-one than predicting South Africa's future accurately. People have been giving the three-year promise for three generations. Its ring is hollow by now. It almost feels like a cult that keeps changing the date when the world is ending because it could never admit that the premise was false. South Africa doesn't have to go the way of Zimbabwe just because your great-uncle, who moved to Canada 60 years ago, said it would. Many of us are choosing to walk around feeling sorry for ourselves, anxiety at our maximum, and our relationship strained to the breaking point for the sake of I'm being a realist, so that we can declare with absolute confidence as if God has showed up and told us to shear forth this prophecy of doom. I'm telling you, South Africa has 3 years left. Get out while you can, so said the Lord. And he also told me that university overseas, costing up to 2 million rand a year, is the only answer for your children. Move now. And all of us are supposed to nod and say, amen. How about joy? How about walking around with a jump in our step and a flicker in our eye? How about toning down our anxiety levels and regaining some inner peace? How about throwing away the fear that seems to corrode every fiber of serenity within our society? There is a big difference between reasonable and unreasonable fear. And I pray that God gives us the wisdom to know the difference. Yes, we have a mental health crisis, but there's something we can do about it. It might not solve it, but it will surely help. Stop kvetching. Start living. It's a great life here, and we have lots to be grateful for. Choosing gratitude and living with more serenity is one of the best things we can do to combat our mental health crisis. My name is Rabbi Levi Avtson. You're listening to the Verbringen on 101.9 Chai FM.
This is the Verbringen with Rabbi Levi Avtson on 101.9 Chai FM.
This is 101.9 Chai FM. My name is Rabbi Levi Avtson of Linksfield Shul. And just before this beautiful song, Nothing in Your Life, sung by Mordechai Shapiro, we were talking about an op-ed I wrote in the Jewish Report last week. And basically the idea of that there's a mental health crisis in our community. And there's a lot of answers to that. But one of the answers is to maybe fight or remove the cynical and pessimistic narrative that seems to have infiltrated our community over decades, generations, and walk around with a bit of a jump in our step and a little more positivity. And especially now, with hopefully things of promise and things are looking a little up. But the truth is, even when things aren't looking up, I think there's a basic premise that we often forget. And that is, why are we here in this world? If we're here in this world to have a pleasant life, I've said it before, death, not the actual act of death, but post-death, is more pleasant than life. Right? The most pleasant place is where we go after we pass away and before we were born. Our souls in heaven are at peace. At every funeral, we say, Tanuach al mishkavcha b'shalom. You should rest in peace. We don't look at a baby at a bris or at a baby naming and we sit there saying, may you have a peaceful life. We say, may you have a life of growth. May you grow up, may you grow and evolve in your knowledge, you should have, please God, get married and be marriageable material, which is more important. You should be a person of good deeds. But that's not peaceful, that's growth. And growth is never peaceful. Growth is challenging, it's putting in effort. So yes, we want peace in this world, but fundamentally that's not what we're here for. And yet many of us seem to chase that. I remember I was one time in school and this fellow says, I asked him, what's your dream of life? And he says, to spend the rest of my life in an island, just drinking martinis. I was like, wow, that sounds very much like death. What's the, really? That's the point of life? So if I gave you right now $1 billion and I sent you to an island with martinis, how long do you think you would last before you literally lose your mind? Or become a person that you're embarrassed to actually call yourself as your own. Life's about growth. So we're here in this world not to have the most pleasant life possible, which often seems to be the narrative that many of us have bought into. And then as a result of that, we sit there going running around the world trying to convince myself, maybe I'm going to get the perfect life in Toronto, in Atlanta, in California, or maybe Sydney, London, Ranana. I have to get the perfect life. I need it. And instead, the question is, how do I make God's world a more pleasant place? In other words, instead of me thinking about how I make the nicest home for myself in this world, how do I make God's a home for God? How do I be of service? And that's really why we played the song just a moment ago. Nothing in your life will ever mean as much to you as making the life of another person, of making the world a better place, making the life of another person easier, of making an impact on somebody else. when I'm spending my life trying to figure out where is the best place for me, 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 first of all, I end up a narcissist, and I chase a tail that I can never reach, because what is the best place for me? Is it a place that is the easiest? Is easy good? He quote, and I've quoted him many times, Denzel Washington, smart fellow. Good actor as well, but mainly a very wise fellow. And one of the things he says is, ease is a greater threat to progress than hardship. Ease is a greater threat to progress than hardship. In other words, when we're chasing ease, when all we're looking for is ease, besides the fact that it doesn't exist, even if it does exist, it's going to destroy you. It will not let you progress. If all you're looking for is the easiest way to live, then basically all I'll be doing is sitting at home all day on my bed, eating ice cream. But it's meaningless. It's nice once in a while, especially when I'm having a bad day, I want to sit at bed and eat some delicious ice cream. But fundamentally, that's not the point of life. It's an escape of life. It's an indulgence of life. It's not the point of life. Having a nice holiday is beautiful. It's not the point of life. For many of us, we literally live from holiday to holiday as if the goal of life is the next holiday. Where am I going in December? Where am I going in July? And where am I going for the long weekend? And where, what, who, who? You're like, no, that's a necessary part. No one's against holiday, at least I'm not. But that is a means to an end, to get back into the real life. It's not the goal. The goal is not to survive till December. The goal is for December to give you the energy to carry you till July. What's the purpose? The purpose is to be productive. The purpose is to serve others. The purpose is to make God's world a better place. This purpose is not for me to have a death-like peace. And I literally believe that that switch alone, that narrative switch alone, can literally alter the trajectory of our lives. When a person stops dreaming of a peaceful, easy life and asks themselves, where can I be of service? That will change everything. Because then your whole goals changes. Every decision that you make is now based on a different premise. You're not asking yourself where it's going to be easy and fun and pleasant, but where it's going to be meaningful. And often it's literally will lead to the exact opposite decision, because easy and meaningful are rarely the same answer. In other words, most decisions, not all decisions, like if I choose to eat a green apple or a red apple, that's pretty much insignificant on the bigger scale, and doesn't necessarily one mean one's easier, one's harder. But many decisions in my life are between what's comfortable and what will stretch me. Now, if my goal in life is to have a pleasant life, I will make the comfortable decision, or many will call it the cowardice decision, right? Because the coward is always taking the easy road out. But if I'm not looking for easy, I'm looking for meaningful, and I'm looking to live a life of values, and I want to sit back at the end of every day and know that I made more decisions based on values than not, then I'll make a very different decision. And when I make the right decision because I didn't look for the easy road, then I'll be very proud at the end of the day and at the end of my life, at the end of the week, at the end of the month, the end of the year, of the decisions I've made, because I know I've made those decisions based on a value system, based on a moral value system, rather than, no, I'm going to only make a decision that works for me, that's going to make me feel comfortable, that's going to help me avoid responsibility, that's going to make me feel cool and accepted and convince myself that I've made it. And then I end up with nothing. Because fundamentally, I didn't have values. Values are the only thing that really matter in this world. Values and relationships. The famous words of Nachmanides, one of the great sages of the 13th century, who says, "Ein maseinu ela b'tarasei." I believe it was him, it might have been an earlier sage, who says that what makes the Jewish people special and unique is its values. Its values. People will talk about the brains, and they'll talk about the impact, and they'll talk about all that stuff that makes them feel good. But fundamentally, what's kept us going for thousands of years is our values. Values that parents passed over to their children. Teachings, ideas, behaviors, values that are important, that literally carried us through and will continue to carry us through forever and ever. So instead of, for example, having the single biggest drive of me as a father is to make sure my kids are financially okay and educated, which are important, but if instead of that being the highest goal ought to be values. And yes, there is a value of being independent. There is a value of taking responsibility and earning a living. But not because I'm worshiping money, not because I need it, but rather because it's a value, because it's a higher value, because it's right. When a person lives a life of values, it literally shifts their perspective. Unfortunately, part of my job is counseling. There's nothing unfortunate about it, but unfortunately, sometimes I'm meeting people whose life's decisions made under duress or just made with lack of judgment and lack of wisdom destroyed parts of their life. And it's so tragic because it's not a bad person. Few of us, if any, are bad people. But a lot of us make very bad decisions in our lives. Choosing to marry the wrong person or to not get married at all. How to raise our kids or to not have kids at all, etc. Lots of decisions in which we're not really thinking long term. We're just thinking about what's easy and comfortable and what resonates with me now rather than thinking of the big picture. And then years later, we have to pay the price of our decisions. But if we had the wisdom and the values, we would make such different decisions. It's really, other than things like God's, you know, destiny for us, which mostly is out of our control, the biggest factor in how our life plays out is our own values and morals and decision making. And fundamentally, the biggest shift we could do in our decision making that will change the course of our life is making decisions based on values rather than convenience. This is 101.9 Chai FM.
This is the Verbringen with Rabbi Levi Avtson on 101.9 Chai FM.
So this is 101.9 Chai FM. Hope you've been enjoying the music and maybe the ideas we've been sharing throughout the show. Last few minutes, time to start wrapping up. Fundamentally, what we've been trying to explore today is this idea that our attitudes is so powerful, much more powerful than the reality outside of us. And our perspectives of life are what determine the quality of life we have. And one of the ideas that we often forget is that hard isn't bad. Obviously, we ask Hashem to remove the hard challenges, the tough ones. But hardship at the basic level is not bad. It's human. It's where we grow in. And living in this country and living in this community and being alive in the 21st century is definitely not easy. But it's deeply meaningful if you allow it to be. There's so much room for impact. I remember years ago, I was in Italy, about 18 years ago, I spent a year in Italy, and it came Purim, and I had to give on Purim the mitzvah of giving poor people charity, and I remember struggling to find somebody. I'm not saying it's the same way now, and maybe it wasn't the reality then, but that was my perception at the time, that it wasn't an easy mitzvah to do. Then I came to this country. Both within our community and outside the community, there's so much room for impact. You could call it poverty, which it is. There's also incredible room for impact. And for relatively small amounts of money, you can make a real impact. And it doesn't cost that much, even if you're really poor, to buy a loaf of bread and then take the bread, put some peanut butter on, and go give it to somebody even poorer than you. I imagine that most of our listeners, at least once in a while, can afford to do that. so easy to have an impact. But the question is that what I want? Or do I want to live in a magnificent house on top of an island, avoid all the pain of this world, drink a pina colada and a martini, reading a book for the rest of my life, never worry about a thing, which is pretty much impossible because your anxiety will always kick in and make you worry about something, as if you could avoid sickness and car accidents and God knows what else. What a silly way, what a silly chase, what a goose chase to find that utopia on earth. The goal of life is not utopia, that's death. Or to use another thing, it's Mashiach, and please God, it will come, the Messianic redemption. But right now, in this time, trying to create utopia while I'm not in utopia, that's a fool's paradise, and it never lasts, and it leads to an incredible amount of anxiety. Think about your relative who emigrated 30 years ago, or 50 years ago, and then their kids emigrate to the next spot, and the next spot, and the next spot, 4 countries later. Have they found peace? No. Because that whole search was silly from the beginning. Life's not about searching for peace. Life's for searching for impact and reasonable security. Reasonable. And we have the privilege, I imagine most of my listeners are here in South Africa, we have a privilege to live in a country that continues to exceed everyone's doomsday predictions. Oh, it's going to be bloodshed when we go from a one party to a multi-party. Oh, democracy is going to be a disaster. It's been messy, but the democracy has held. The people in this country are good. People often ask me why I'm such an optimist about this country. And obviously, I believe in the promise and the commitment that Lubavitcher Rebbe gave years ago for this country. But that's an act of faith. And you could buy in or not buy in. Moving to this country and seeing the people of this country, that's what gives me optimism. Until you live in other countries, you don't realize how good the average South African is. They're kind, and they're sweet, and they're moderate, with very little hatred, if at all, in most of their hearts. We're blessed. We're blessed to be part of this culture, part of this community. And we should never take it for granted. I remember when I moved to this country, there was a lot of people that told me a lot of negative things. Why would you move here from America? But one person, I forgot who, put it this way. He says, if we have to wait for Mashiach to come, South Africa is a pretty decent place to wait. I thought that was an interesting perspective. Unlike many who feel shortchanged by the fact that they're living here, I feel blessed. And I encourage you at this time to start counting the blessings. After all the thousands of hours of conversations of anxiety and worry and predictions, at this moment of deep vindication, not that because things are perfect, but because our worst dreams have not materialized, and the best case scenario in real life is so far playing out in front of our eyes. I encourage you, I beg you, cherish this moment. And for a small time, remove the self-pity and be grateful that God chose us to live this life in this place with these people. Because honestly, I wouldn't have it any other way. This is 101.9 Chai FM. My name is Rabbi Levi Epson of Linksfield Shul. Thank you for joining us. Have a great day.